The reading today is from John chapter 5. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the sheep gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat." But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well.
Good morning. I bring you greetings from Wetherby Baptist Church. As I said last time I was here, we have our service at 10:30, so somebody is getting up to stand and speak to the good folk of Wetherby Baptist Church, and we do enjoy it, fellowship, as it were, remotely with other Baptist churches. Now, we moved all the way from Hampshire to Wetherby 15 years ago, just over 15 years ago. And we moved a little bit in a hurry because all the people, we weren't in that much of a hurry, but the other people were. And the removal men, in fact, were quite in a hurry because they'd done a job down in London. They came from Tockwith, I think it was. So they came down and they wanted to get back to Tockwith. So they announced to us on the phone that they wanted to come and start work on our stuff. And we'd prepared quite a lot, we hadn't done it all. So we ended up having the men throw in stuff into the boxes and things, some of which got marked with things like garage, very helpful, kitchen, dining room, that sort of stuff. We did incidentally, and this is nothing to do with the sermon, did incidentally several months later, because it was just after Christmas, we wondered where our nutcrackers had gone. And we eventually found them wrapped up very nicely in paper in with the nuts that were in a bowl. It took us quite a while, didn't it, before we found that. But once we'd got sort of sorted out, there were still odd boxes around that we hadn't unpacked. There were also things in funny places because we'd sort of, well, where'd you put this? You know, we were in a different house, different cupboards, different rooms, and so we put them down. And it was only after quite a while sometimes that we thought, why have we got those there? I mean, we didn't have quite, it wasn't manic, you know, the television wasn't in the downstairs toilet or anything like that. But some things were misplaced. But we got used to them. We got used to them being, and we hadn't really stopped and thought, what's the best way? Where are the best places to store this so that life becomes easier? And this unnamed man, who gets half a chapter in John's Gospel. We don't know what his name is. Clearly, a man of habit. Now, the story seems pretty straightforward, really. He's a sick man. He's obviously disabled, unable to walk. He's been so for a long time. And then Jesus comes and heals him. End of story, really. Good story. Nice story. Now, there was a deep pool, as we read. A deep pool. It was fed by an underground stream. And it was obviously a place of healing because there were colonnades that had been built around this pool called Bethesda. A bit like if you've been to Bath, you know that there are pools in there, in the Roman baths, where the water looks very green, if I remember rightly, and it's fed by underground streams, which have healing properties, if you like to think that way. And there was a legend, or if you like, a superstition, that whenever the waters got disturbed and bubbled up, it wasn't just a volcanic eruption, it was the first one, the suspicion, was that the first person in the pool got healed. So you can imagine the competition that went on as soon as there was a... And you can imagine there might have been some false starts. Is it bubbling? Is it... Some managed to actually add an extra verse. We didn't have the numbers on there, and they waited for the moving of the waters. From time to time, an angel of the Lord would come down and stir up the waters. First one into the pool after each such disturbance would be cured of whatever disease he had. Now, it's likely that verse was put in for the people who didn't know about that tradition or that superstition to explain it. But it was known, obviously, in John's time when John was writing. And we have no idea. Actually, not as a scientist, I would like to know how often the pool was stirred. Was it once a week, twice a day, every 6 months? We don't know. But clearly, it was often enough that people thought it was worth their while sort of camping out in case the waters were stirred and they could be healed. And you can imagine the scene, can't you? When the bubbles start to come, there's a rising hope and a hubbub and people stagger towards to get into it. And it's probably quite competitive. But this man was clearly, even after 38 years, was resigned to his fate. He couldn't move very quickly, and clearly he didn't have anyone that would help him, which is what he needed, someone to help him get in the pool. But he'd got used to it. It was his way of life. He sat there and presumably he got some food and drink. Perhaps other Jews would be compassionate and feed him. And we're not told why no one helped him, whether he was just alone or his relatives had died, or maybe he was just a miserable old what's-net and nobody wanted to help him. We don't know. But he felt comfortable there, it seems, as safe as he could be. He was, in fact, stuck in a rut. And Billy Graham memorably said that a rut is a coffin with the ends knocked out. Think about that. Well, I quite like that. Now, Jesus went to the festival. We're not sure which one. There are three. All Jewish men were expected to attend. And he hears somehow about this man and his sorry plight of 38 years of waiting. And he finds him. And he asks a most extraordinary question. Do you want to get well? Now, I don't know whether you saw that in the reading. Because question. Obviously, the man wanted to get... He was there, and he'd been like that, and he wasn't, you know, that he got used to it. But surely he wanted. But Jesus says, do you want to get well? And the obvious answer is surely obvious. Or is it? Is Jesus just, making conversation? Or is he issuing a challenge to change. He's a creature of habit, this chap. And if he was healed, and maybe he's thought this through, it would add an awful lot of complications to his otherwise simple lifestyle. He'd need to work, for example, to help others, to get about, to relate to people. And maybe after 38 years, that was a bit much. He couldn't face that. Maybe his condition gave him a justification for inaction. And when you look at his reply, he doesn't go, "Yes, please, way, thank you." He says, "Well, you see, the trouble is, yeah, I've got no one to help me into the pool." And the subtext of that, of course, is that there never is going to be someone to help me. So I'm really resigned to it. And Jesus asks the question, does he want to be changed? Is he prepared to accept the consequences of being healed? And perhaps there are two questions here. Do you want to change? And do you have the faith to think that I, Jesus, can provide it? Now, this is one of the rare healings that Jesus did where there is no evidence of any prior faith. Quite often, people come to Jesus and say, "Help me." The woman who had a blood flow, she wanted desperately to get near to Jesus to touch his cloak because she believed that that would heal her, and indeed it did. But this man doesn't seem to have any preconceptions, doesn't even know who Jesus is. But that doesn't stop Jesus. He says to the man, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." And the man does. Such is Jesus. He doesn't make any more excuses, which is good in his favour. And he actually obeys Jesus to the letter. He does get up and he does pick up his mat and walk. Obedience, essential to a new life. And if he hadn't accepted that, then he couldn't have been healed. It's important to note how Jesus seeks the man's cooperation. I mean, Jesus could have said, "Okay, you're healed," and let him find out for himself. But he doesn't. He needs that man's cooperation. William Barclay said, "The power of God never dispenses with the effort of man. Nothing is true than that we must realize our own helplessness. But in a very real sense, it is true that miracles happen when our will and God's power cooperate to make them possible." Now we might think, the man's up, he's not dancing, he's not walking and leaping and praising God, at least we're not told he was, perhaps he was, like the man that Peter healed. But he's done, and Jesus disappears into the crowd. And John drops the bombshell in verse 9b. "The day on which this took place was the Sabbath." Jesus seemed to do quite a lot of healing on Sabbath days, didn't he? Got him into trouble. Because Jesus had commanded the man to carry his mat. And it was forbidden by the Jewish laws, the Pharisaic laws, to carry things on a Sabbath. In fact, it was punishable by death. Now, it wasn't a commandment. He wasn't breaking one of Moses' commandments. What he was doing was offending against a whole load of rules and regulations that had subsequently been developed by the Pharisees and the lawmakers. I wonder if he realized that when Jesus said, "Get up, take your bed and go." Did he realize he was doing work which was forbidden? I'm not sure he did. But he did recognize Jesus' authority. And if he didn't realize what he was doing, it was didn't take very long before the Jewish authorities spotted him and said, "Oi, what are you doing? Carrying your bed on a Sabbath day." I don't suppose he'd expected that, or indeed considered that when Jesus said, "Get up." But from now on, he was a marked man. That change to being healthy came at a potentially very serious cost. And Jesus obviously recognises that that man is marked, as it were. So he goes back and he finds him deliberately, makes himself known to Jesus. The healing, you see, was physical, not spiritual. And for it to be full and proper and whole, then he needs to keep faith and to obey God. As he says to him, "Go and sin no more." Now, we don't know quite what maybe it was a particular sin he was worried about. Maybe it was just his natural sinfulness. We don't know. And Jesus, by going to the man and identifying himself, sets himself on a trail that ultimately leads to the cross, because he's telling people to disobey the law. And eventually, as time goes on, that opposition and that confrontation builds. There's a story of an 83-year-old grandmother who set off. She'd had a hospital appointment somewhere in Worcester, and she'd set off to drive home, but there were some roadworks and she was diverted. And 8 hours and 300 miles later, she ran out of petrol in Edinburgh, I think it was. She evidently missed all the signs saying that she was going up, I don't know, the M5 or the M6. How you could do that for 300 miles, I'm not really sure. Her family, of course, was very worried. Her neighbour realised that she'd been gone a long time, for about a 6-mile drive to the hospital, and eventually, of course, they got her back. You see, Jesus said that he'd come to give us life in all its fullness. But have we missed the signs that lead to that fullness? Is it possible that Jesus wants to do more in our lives than we're currently doing? Are we stuck in a rut like that man? Do you want to be healed? Is there something that's hindering us from enjoying life in all its fullness? But we don't want to make changes, don't want to accept the cost. We need to be looking, and always looking, for his prompts, these little nudges, where God is at work in our lives. The good thing is that God usually doesn't give up. He sort of keeps on prompting until we yield to it. Are we prepared to be obedient? Do we feel perhaps occasionally the disturbance in the water, which might be unsettling or puzzling or even confusing? We need to ask ourselves, do we want to be made well? Do we trust God in that? There's a party game, isn't there, where you, certainly with children we used to do, where you put a lot of unfamiliar foods, or any foods really, you get them to blindfold themselves and then you feed them tiny bits of food. Some of them are very nice, you feed them a bit of marshmallow or chocolate or something, and some of them were a bit distasteful, like salt or Bovril or, dare I say it, Marmite. And they had to, of course, trust. We weren't going to give them anything really nasty and horrible. And we are urged to taste and see that the Lord is good. We may not know, we may be blindfolded as to what the future holds, but God is good to us. For those who believe that God cares for us, we can trust in him, even if we're anxious about it. We have two friends that go way back. One lost her husband in a horrible car accident, and the other one, other couple, lost their child to leukemia. And initially that seemed appalling and a disaster, and clearly they were traumatized by that. But ultimately, many years later, two of the people became ministers in the church. Now, I think they would be the first to say they would have preferred not for that to happen, to make them, convince them that God wanted them to be ministers. But out of that tragedy came something good. Out of that difficulty, out of that cost, they were able to be prepared and to recognise and see life in all its goodness. They were prepared to be made well. Now, I'm hopeful that our circumstances are much less drastic than that, much less severe. But we do have to ask ourselves, do I want to get well? Amen.